You are unique, active, determined, resilient. You are not your diagnosis, and you are not alone. This is Young Onset Parkinson's Network. We believe young onset Parkinson's disease does not define you. You define it. We are a safe place to learn, connect, and engage within a supportive community that actually gets it, because we've got it too. Welcome to Young Onset Parkinson's Network. Living well starts here.
Good morning, everybody. It's Mike. I'm here with Nathan, and the founder of Young Onset Parkinson's Network, Anna Grill. Good
Hi,
morning,
Dave.
Anna. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
I'm doing great.
Good.
It's good to see you.
Thank you. You guys as well.
Mike, you're talking good today.
So far, it can change in a minute.
Well, that's why you maximize it when it's good.
That's right. So, Anna, tell us a little bit about yourself, people who don't know you.
I am 54 years old. I live with my husband, who was my high school sweetheart, still is my sweetheart. And we live in Northern Virginia, about 30 minutes west of Washington, D.C., in a town called Vienna, with our two golden doodles who might show up at some point here on the show. And I was diagnosed at the age of 37. I think it was 37. It was 2007. Pretty sure I was 37. So I've had it for about 16, maybe 17 years now. Who's counting, right? And worked for quite some time following that. I had a big career and I loved it. And I was in sales with a big corporation and had a lot of fun, did pretty well. Kept it to myself, like many of us do, for many, many years, and then didn't engage with the community at all until I left my work. And then I kind of did a 180 and got really involved. So at that point, I realized there was nothing for young onset, and I didn't like that. And I remember dealing with it myself and feeling very isolated, and that's what drove me to start up the network.
Well, that takes care of the first question on my list.
Yes, it does.
Our interviewees keep doing this to me. Right in the introduction, they start ticking off. Let's back up a little bit.
They'll kill me if I don't mention that. I do have two adult daughters, 22 and 24. So we'll get into
hello to them. She mentioned you. Don't hold it against her.
That's so right.
For those of our audience that are listening that aren't members yet, what is the Young Onset Parkinson's Network?
Okay, so basically it's a community of people all around the world now, surprisingly, that either have been diagnosed with young onset Parkinson's disease, which we have a more liberal definition of for our group. It's really 55 or younger. We give them an extra 5 years after the medical definition of 50, and any of their loved ones, family members, care partners, that type of thing. Young onset is a small segment statistically within the greater Parkinson's disease community, but numbers wise, it's more rapidly growing than the traditional segment. And it's really, you know, very traumatic and we all three of us, I know, have gone through this. For those who are listening that may have not, the trauma of realizing that A, that you have the disease, and B, that when you look at the resources, it's pictures of people at ages that you can't even relate to, and with assistive devices that you can't even imagine ever needing to use. So that really needed to be addressed. And so we meet twice monthly. We're a virtual community. We're over 800 members now, which is crazy. And we cover 46 states and 24 countries, I believe, when I last saw. We have people on our calls from New Zealand, you know, Australia.
New Zealand now, eh?
Exactly. Maybe it's daytime there now. When we meet, these guys come on at all hours. And we have it's a combination of speaker events and education, and as well as community gatherings where basically we all show up and we just break out into the rooms and talk and hang out, share our experiences, our tips, what's working well for us, that sort of stuff. So we also have a great resource page within our member directory. And that provides people with all sorts of great information. And we just started a program that I'm really excited about. Maybe we can talk more about later, called the Resource Navigator Program. So lots of different programs, events. We're also starting up local groups, which I think we're going to call YOPN Live, like YOPN Live New York, YOPN Live, whatever city you're in. So we're just naming that now. If you have any better ideas, let me know. But we're excited about that too, the opportunity to bring people together socially. So
take us back a little bit. You were diagnosed at what age?
37 or 38. I should do the math, I guess.
It's okay. We'll call it 38. Okay.
Yeah.
Like so that. You were diagnosed at 38. What was the impact of the diagnosis like on your life? And then can you take us forward and how has this network that you've created helped you in your own journey with PD?
Sure. Thanks for asking. Well, I was completely blown away. I mean, I had no idea that it was Parkinson's. I think I probably caught it pretty fast. I mean, all I had was a very, very slight tremor in my left pinky. And that's funny because I think that's how Michael J. Fox got diagnosed and a few other people that I've talked to. It was the left pinky.
Me Who knows too. Why?
You too, yeah. Mike. Wow. Yeah. That's wild. All good people must have a left pinky issue.
Agreed.
I don't know. There was a cartoon and there was pinky and then there was the brain. So take your pick, guess.
Yeah, but the brain's effed up, so that doesn't count. Anyway, so I mean, I have a very interesting and kind of horrifying, funny now, but not at the time, story about my first doctor's visit. I went to see a very well-known movement disorder specialist in the area here, and I've never been in a neurologist office before, and just sitting in the the chair in the doctor's room waiting for her to come in. She opened the door. I don't even think she came all the way into the doorway. She opened the door, looked at me for what felt like 30 seconds, if or so. She didn't even say a word, didn't introduce herself, nothing. She just looked at me and then she said, "You have Parkinson's." And I was like, "Excuse me?" And before I could even realize what she had just said, she was writing a script and handing it to me, sticking it in my face, handing it to me, saying, "Go fill this out. Take it for 2 weeks. If it helps, that confirms it. Come back and see me in 2 weeks."
Was she very cold when she asked you, "What did you mention? We had Parkinson's." Was it like cold?
It was very, very matter of fact. Yeah. I mean, I didn't even know who this woman was. I was like, "And you are?" You know, like it was really terrible.
Parkinson's whisperer.
Yeah. So I guess she wanted to prove how smart she was or something. I don't know. So I kind of gave her the wave and I didn't even take her damn prescription paper and knew I was never going to go back there again.
I had a very similar experience myself, my first doctor.
Really?
Had to walk up and down a hallway. Only time my shoes on time. After I did that, he just said, "You have Parkinson's," out of the blue, like nothing. Nothing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I did not stick with that guy at all.
Yeah, no, don't. If anyone listening, I mean, you do not need to be treated like that. So I went to another doctor in Reston, Virginia, who was not an MDS, and he was a great guy because he recognized his limitations and he was very empathetic. And he said, "You're so young and I don't really know for sure. And I want to put you in touch with a real specialist." So that's how I got to my first doctor who treated me for the first like 9 or 10 years of the disease. He actually sent me up to John Feinstein Medical Center on Long Island, which at the time was one of the centers beta test what ended up being the DAT scan. It's called the fluorodopa scan at the time. I mean, I don't know why they don't use that for everyone because it's a clear way to see the dopamine levels in your brain. And it seems to me like everybody that thinks they have Parkinson's should have that done because it helped me understand and see visually, yes, that the levels on the one side of the lobe of my brain were lower than the other and lower than normal. And like they always talk about not really having a test to determine if you have Parkinson's, but I think there is a test. And I think that would be helpful for a lot of people to have. It's mainstream now. Insurance covers it. I had a fight for that at the time. And I just really think it should be utilized more. But as far as Nathan, I don't know if I answered your question now. I've been talking so long.
You did. And I was actually sitting here about to ask another question. Then I had a little bit of a brain fart there. And then I stared at Mike for a second, like, "Talk, Mike, talk."
I was going to jump into a question, dude.
That's all right. I think this is one of the first times I've ever had that happen, which is odd. That happens in my everyday life all the time. But when I'm doing these podcasts, I just flow for some reason.
Must be me.
Welcome to my world, folks. This is what it's like. Sometimes I just sit here and don't say anything.
That's cool.
I've been doing that for years, Nathan.
So why you described this vast array of people that you've got now under the umbrella of YOPN, all people with Parkinson's from different backgrounds, but all needing support and community. Why is that so important? No matter who you are with Parkinson's, why is that support and community important?
I think especially with young onset, Parkinson's carries this weird shame about it. I have no idea why. Like, there's nothing we did. It's not like we were doing heroin or something in the 70s and got Parkinson's from it. You know, we just ended up being on the end of the stick on that one. So I don't know why we all, there's a sense of, you know, like, I have friends who've had other conditions like cancer and things like that. And I have a friend who actually has both young onset and another like osteoarthritis condition. She's very open about that. It's just, she doesn't talk about the Parkinson's at all, and she won't. So, and I hit it for 10 years thinking like, I can't have my coworkers thinking I have this crazy disease. So there's, you know, we need to help each other through that, I think. And it's both good to know that, well, you know, everybody has to deal on that, on that, that issue on their own time. But in the meantime, it's really, I didn't have a group around me that kind of helped me out. And I wanted to make sure that that was available for the next unlucky crop of folks that ended up in our position.
It's great to know. I just want to bring up this, Bill Rasmussen, the founder of ESPN, came on our show. Mm-hmm. He talked about the shame of the disease as well. Mm-hmm. And he brought up the fact that if you break a leg or break an arm, people can see it, the whole door open for you.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of symptoms of Parkinson's are hidden. People don't see it. They look at you like you're drunk or something like that.
Right.
There's so much doubt in society in general. People just don't trust each other.
And yeah, that's a recent, rather recent phenomenon, I think, that's gotten worse.
It's unfortunate. It takes people like us that have those hidden symptoms and puts us in a really bad predicament. And then even though, you know, there's people out there who show their symptoms and are, you can tell just by looking at it, this person has Parkinson's, they feel shame too. It's not always just the hidden symptoms. Right. There's shame, I think, around this largely because it's a brain disorder. And people with Parkinson's are kind of in a unique position across the broad spectrum of brain disorders because we keep our cognition longer than most other, you know, brain disorders do. And you're talking Alzheimer's, dementia, things like that. We have an opportunity to say, hey, you know, just because it's Parkinson's disease does not mean that I am completely degraded brain-wise and that I'm not equal to you anymore. And so, I think that that is immediately, for some reason, a natural response within most people that I've encountered in our society when they realize, okay, this person's got a brain disorder. Well, that means since I don't have a brain disorder, I can think better than them. I can, you know.
That's a great point, Nate. I never really thought through it that far, but you're exactly right. We have a congresswoman here in Virginia. Unfortunately, she just announced that she actually doesn't have Parkinson's. She has something worse. That's just very sad. She has PSP. Mm. When she came out with her Parkinson's diagnosis just a few months ago, the fire and the venom that was being spewed on her post, like, I mean, I wanted to jump into the computer and get my boxing gloves out. Like, I was pissed off. This guy was proposing that, like, she should stop, she should end her term immediately, that she's not fit to be, you know, congresswoman. And I was just appalled that people could be, one, so stupid, and two, so mean.
Well, this spreads right. I mean, you're talking about a politician, but think about the politics involved in a marriage, especially one that dissolves when it falls apart.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's another thing that people with Parkinson's deal with is being looked down upon in that situation. And thereby, many people have lost custody of their children because of this disease.
That is sinful.
There's going to be people that will reach out to Mike that hear me say this and say, yes, that happened to me. I guarantee it. I've heard it from multiple people that they went through the court system and the Parkinson's disease was used by the opposing attorney, the opposing counsel, as evidence that they're unfit. And awful. That's unfortunate. But that type of a situation is what drives the narrative. When people know that, okay, this person has Parkinson's, I can use that against them.
Right.
That's always an ace up the sleeve. And we have to be mindful that with how we communicate as people with Parkinson's, we don't need to tell everybody everything.
Right. But to that point, definitely. But I also
ourselves in a bind.
But I also think we sometimes go too positive as well. Like, it's a fine line, right? Because so many of us have such great attitudes that I think Parkinson's then becomes, oh, well, it's just Parkinson's. You know what I mean? Like, it comes funding at the government level and things like that. All these other things are horrible and they're going to kill you. You just have Parkinson's. That's not that bad.
You know, I think that that's a disservice that folks like myself and Mike, you I'm sure have done it in the past. You don't have as much of an opportunity now since your symptoms are getting worse. But to hide it and act like this is not that bad.
I know. And I'm more guilty on that side of the fence. I think from the way I you know, communicate and portray the disease, you know.
How do you be a leader without, you know, kind of ignoring that a little bit and presenting that way?
Right. And isn't it sad that that's the case? And that hence why so many of us hide it.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I got a few promotions at work that had I given it a name, I don't know that I would have gotten them.
Yeah, I'm quoting a friend of mine, but he, looking into his future, was thinking, well, how am I going to be viewed by my peers if I'm standing in front of them in a boardroom shaking?
Yeah.
It does not exude confidence, for sure.
I had some, you know, in the years that I was working and trying to mask it, I had some really stressful and you know, very, what's the word? Emotional situation.
You can say shit, if that's what you're going to say.
Yeah, well, definitely.
I won't tell the boss.
Probably the shit one is, no pun intended, I was at a manager's meeting and I was also the youngest and only female in my team for a long time. And so the benefit of that, though, is when you talk about when you have to go to the bathroom, there's no line at the hotel. So that was a good thing. But I was the last day of the conference and I was tired as hell. And I was really struggling, like through lunch and stuff. And I just couldn't wait to get out of there. I had driven because I was close enough, but everybody else had flown in. And the net of it was I went into the ladies' room. Everyone had our bags already and stuff. And I went into the ladies' room to go use the bathroom. And as I'm in there, I could hear all the guys like mingling and congregating like right out in the lobby, right outside the bathroom. And I was shaking and I was mess. And I was like, there's no way I can go out there. Like, I just can't. Like, I'm just going to have to stay in here till they get out. I literally sat in the stall for 45 minutes until I didn't hear anyone out there.
That kind of thing has to affect your psychology of the disease, too.
Yeah.
The psyche must go in the tank.
I know. You know, so it's really, I mean, that sucked. That was really bad.
What a place to be stuck.
I know. But you know what? I felt it was a better option than freaking walking out and showing my symptoms.
Yeah.
You know? So
yeah, I've had a few situations like that, but Mike, why don't we just walk the hell out? What is it about us?
I don't know. In my situation, I was afraid to lose the money. Because my wife, I made the money, the family then.
You and me both. Yeah. We were the same.
Got to pay those bills.
Yeah.
Pay the bills and you're petrified about not being able to pay them when you get this disease.
And then what do you do when, you know, you get this at a young age and say, Mike, you're not quite ready for retirement yet. All the plans that you had are now going to be funded by half the retirement you planned on because you got to go early, you know.
All I can say is, and I know this is not the right audience to say it to because most people listening to us already have it. Get your disability insurance now. It doesn't matter if you're perfectly healthy and it doesn't matter if you never think you're going to go to the doctor. Get it now. I mean, that's the only thing that saved me.
Same here.
I think there's a stigma over that as well, especially if people are encouraged through society to work. You know, you need to be a productive member of the society. So they see disability as this letting go of that side of themselves. And it's a struggle.
That hasn't been a problem for me. I mean, my attitude about that is I worked for the same company for 29 years and I put my time in and I worked my ass off and I was very successful. And I felt like that, you know, that I feel validated that's what I should have, you know? And if anyone wants to talk about it, they can call me up because I can talk to them about how much work I'm doing now.
Yeah. Like,
you know, an unpaid kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely an undeserved stigma, right?
Yeah, for sure.
You seem so mentally strong to me. How have you been able to maintain your mental strength?
I always say this, like I say to Heather, I mean, she's so insightful and so dramatic and so wonderfully spoken and whatnot. And at the end of the day, she's a big thinker. Like she's a deep thinker. I'm not. I'm not a deep thinker. And I think that's a very positive thing to have with this disease, because I think the people that think about it too much get way inside their head too much. Call me Barbie, I don't know, but I just don't go there. I don't know. I just keep things, you know, if I had a good day, say I had a good day, say, and I'm not going to be introspective and ask, well, how could I have had a better day? Like, what's the point of that?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if that's hardwired or if it's something you can acquire, but just don't think so much.
It seems like there's over 800 people benefiting from your mentality to be that way. How does it make you feel when you think about that, that you've got this growing network? It's large enough as it is to be proud of, but it's growing. Yeah. So thinking about years to come, what effect this might have, how does that make you feel?
You know, I feel grateful. I think you had asked me earlier and I didn't really answer it. What does it do for me, or how does it help me? And I mean, I feel so grateful every day that I've been put in a position to be able to do something like this, because honestly, I mean, I would definitely not be doing as well as I am if it wasn't for this. So when everyone gives me thanks, I just say back to them, you know, don't think I'm that great of a person. I'm actually kind of selfish.
Absolutely.
And I'm doing
I feel the same way. I was telling a client, it's been about a month now, but I've been laughing about it since. He realized that I need to work out too. So the exercises that I was doing with him were basically my Parkinson's exercises, but he was paying me to do them. So
damn, yeah, that's
folks, I've hacked the system. If you want to, you know,
maybe
get
that's
paid
what I
to
need
work
to
out.
Do to get working out more.
Just get your certification and get yourself some clients.
There
they
you
will
go.
Push
that's
you to
awesome.
Work out. So yeah, I'm selfish.
You're a motivator for them. I mean, my goodness, they must be standing there going, if he can do it, I can do it, you know?
Yeah, but it's a selfish thing.
It is, right? I mean, at the end of the day, yeah, I mean, it's really given me purpose, and I can get into my five mantras of success with Parkinson's, but a big one of them is purpose.
Yeah.
And you have to get out of bed every day, and you have to figure out, and that's hard for a lot of people. You know, what is that going to be? It's probably not going to be what you thought it was going to be.
I think that's the beautiful thing about American entrepreneurialism, I guess would be the way to put it, is that we as American, it's our culture to get knocked down and drag yourself up by the bootstraps, right? And that's exactly what you're talking about here. You got Parkinson's, you know, you're going on disability. Normally these things would, in my situation, knock a person down, but you took that and drug yourself up by the bootstraps and were entrepreneurial in it, that you built something that other people could then jump on board with you and go for the same ride.
Yeah.
So tell us where that ride's heading now. You mentioned something earlier that you've got planned. What is it?
Well, I don't know what that was about, but that particular thought, but I can tell you.
It was a program that you're starting soon with YOPN.
Oh, the Resource Navigator. Is that
yes.
What?
Starts with an R.
Ew.
Look at me.
No. Yeah, that is exciting. And we are just rolling that out now. So we were able to, long story, but I had gotten to know a certified therapist, social worker who served that role for the Georgetown Neurology Department for 4 years. She and I got to be good friends. She got married and was moving to North Carolina, so she couldn't do that job for them anymore. And I happened to know and was talking with the CEO of a regional national employee assistance program firm, which I can talk a little bit about in a minute for those who might not know what it means, out of Baltimore that I knew and worked with in my prior life. She was growing rapidly and needed staff. My friend Abby from Georgetown had moved to North Carolina and was looking for work. And I wanted to start this program up where I could offer mental wellness help to my members. So it kind of all came together really nicely in a win-win-win, because ultimately what happened was I introduced the two of them. Dawn hired Abby on her staff. And Abby now is part of her job description. Part of what she does is she is the YOPN resource navigator for this program. So we're working with Dawn. It's kind of recently being launched. We're still fine tuning, but The idea is that we are funding Dawn. YOPN is providing Dawn payments for the use of Abby's time with any of our members that would like to take advantage of it.
Awesome.
So they can get an initial 50-minute consultation to understand what they're thinking, what they're feeling, what their concerns are right now. And then she will just, you know, do some help with that, but also direct them to the right resources afterwards to get them more help and get them the help they need. So it's been really, really well received. I can tell you that, you know, we're still like evaluating initial surveys and such to see how we can make it even better. But, and the interesting thing is that the issues have run the gamut from, hey, I'm starting to think about transitioning out of work. What do I need to think about with disability? Like everything from how to transition out of work smoothly to I'm in Idaho and I'm not satisfied with my care. And how can I find a better doctor in Idaho? So she's finding these resources for these people and she's making it happen. And I think it's really cool.
So collaboration is what you're describing here. How is that important now that you've kind of developed yourself into this organization that's got roots? How is it important going forward for you to collaborate with others who maybe have differing services or even the same services?
Absolutely. Yeah. We're looking to, really grow through connections, through networking. I've just been connected to a bunch of new people that I had through one conversation with a woman here locally. And she had a lot of, you never know. I guess my point is you never know what you're going to learn from someone. So don't ever reject a conversation if someone reaches out to you and wants to have it, because you'll never know what'll come of that. And to, you know, take advantage of, I'm definitely a player with the whole is more than the sum of the parts. And I think if we could do more of that within young onset, especially, I think we'd be a lot stronger. There's so many factions out there, a lot of small grassroots movements in like every city, but nothing that's really bringing us all together. So that's one of my goals. And the best example I can give of that happening is this show itself. Mike had a very successful show of his own, and he had the foresight to want to, you know, talk and learn more. And through our talk, you know, it came up that maybe it would make sense for him to become, you know, our podcast for both of us. And it's worked out great. As far as I'm concerned, I don't know about Mike, but
he's okay.
I'm happy. I'm loving this, honey, because you don't even, let me just do whatever I want to do. You know, like this kind of person who's hovering over me saying, no, you can't do this. You can't say this.
That was my attitude always in business. You had to hire the right people. You don't have to worry about that shit. So,
amen.
Yeah.
So what you've had to have had some stories now since you've been doing this that have come out of the community that have just touched your heart. Can you share one with our listeners?
Oh gosh. Yeah. I wish you would have let me prepare.
I want the open, honest.
But they've been wonderful emails I've gotten and they make me cry. Just recently, I got a note after, I don't know if either of you guys saw Dr. Faulkner's speech on DBS, but a gentleman texted or emailed me and said he wanted to thank me for bringing him on. He said in the 2 years that he had PD, it's the first time he ever felt like he fully understood the disease and he wasn't scared. That he just really, you know, that hit me, because you don't want to, living scared is no fun. So I was happy to hear that Dr. Faulkner could do that for him. I also got a note from a woman, and this has happened a couple of times, care partners. I'm really scared. My spouse just got diagnosed. I don't know where to turn. I don't know what to do. Getting them engaged and then hearing their feedback afterwards is amazing. What else? I know there's many more. You know, I love getting those notes in general, because, you know, it's just like any organization, especially with young onsets. Young onsets, like if busyness is this level for most, like young onsets are off the charts, right? Because not only are they typically getting married, managing marriages, having children, raising young kids, driving them to practice, taking care of the house, managing a chronic disease. Like, I mean, like it's insane. So I get it. Like, I don't expect a whole lot of like responses to surveys and things, because I know that's difficult. So, and usually surveys bring out, you know, with every industry that does them, you hear more of the bad than the good, you know? Yeah. So just to get those little notes, just say, thanks. Like it's great to hear that, you know, we are making a difference and that, you know, that it is impactful for people.
It's cool to be able to highlight somebody like you on our show, because so many times we bring on people who've, you know, climbed a mountain or walked across the country or whatnot. But what you're describing are people celebrating you as a facilitator, as somebody who was a middleman to bring them something that they needed. And I think that can be a really encouraging note for a lot of our listeners who are thinking, well, geez, I can't really start a podcast. I don't really have the skills to start an exercise class. Well, what can I do? You can connect dots. You can be an Anna. You can join her in what she's doing. And on that note, how can people get involved with YOPN? What's the best way?
Well, I mean, the best way to get involved is to first become a member, and that would be through our website, www.yopnetwork.org. And then once you're a member, you get all of our communications, like it or not. And we have meetings twice a month. I'm very accessible. You know, you can get in touch with me, Anna, at yopnetwork.org. So it's pretty easy. And like I've had people call me and say they're interested in, you know, this, that, or the next thing. And, you know, we can get them involved in what they want to do. And they've brought some great ideas as well. So definitely encourage participation. You know, we'd love to have more volunteers. So I think one way, big way that we can get people going is with these regional or local social groups that I mentioned before. So I do have a list of about 15 folks that are interested in leading those. Basically, it's to be kind of a sub-segment of our group, so that it's not to deliver content, it's not to become their own face-to-face, you know, support group. It's really just to have a group that will have happy hour, organize a bike ride, you know, that sort of thing together, and still having them come together with us for the programming.
Nice. So that was yopnetwork.org, right?
Wait, Anna, how much does it cost to sign up to YOPN? What is the price?
$0. And hope to keep that the case as our donations and our sponsors keep coming through. So, yeah.
Seems pretty affordable.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't gotten any complaints about the cost.
So, folks, go and sign up. YOPnetwork.org. YOPnetwork.org. Okay.
But I don't know if you two are, but a lot of people that listen, I'm sure, are big fans of Coach Lasso, right?
Oh, yeah.
And there's a gentleman on that show named Brett Goldstein who played Roy. And I learned, because I started watching another show on Apple called Shrinking, which was produced and written by Roy, or by Brett Goldstein. And I found it very intriguing because Harrison Ford, who plays the owner of the psychiatric office that all these therapists work at, which is the crux of the show, they call it shrinking. That's why they call it shrinking, because they're shrinks. Nonetheless, they portray Harrison Ford as learning that he has Parkinson's. And they do it in such a great way, as far as not making it the headline, not making it the fall down to, you know, failure. I mean, it's just like a backstory, as we would all want it to be with our own stories. And it was done so skillfully. And I was thinking, I was like, why would they write PD into a show? Like, it's just unusual, right? So I did some research. Brett Goldstein's father and grandfather had Parkinson's.
Oh, wow.
So I think it would be a great idea for him to come and talk to our group.
I love his character, Roy.
Isn't it great?
Oh, I love him.
I love him. So, yeah. So I'm trying to figure out my best strategy around that. I'm going to go do like a multi-prong attack, and I've got collected his agents' names and his, you know, different places I can send this on his social media, and see if we can't ring him in for a meeting to join us, like sometime in the early.
He's listening. She's coming your way, buddy.
I am. Watch out.
Get him on the show too, will you?
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Guy's so talented, and he also started an improv. So I'm thinking maybe like a. Because Robert wants to do like an improv, like a show, not just with his stuff, but with an actual improv group that he knows out of California. Mm-hmm. So I was like, how cool would that be to have them all on, and Brett could interact with them in that way too, which would be really cool.
Yeah. Put a new spin on Whose Line Is It Anyway, if we had a bunch of people.
Exactly. Doing that. Yeah. And by the way, he's touring right now. I'll put a plug in for him. I just got tickets myself. I didn't even know he was out there. So,
awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's kind of my ultimate out there goal. We'll see.
That's the back pocket calendar.
Exactly. So
nice.
Yeah.
So take us back to the beginnings of YOPN. How did it get started? And what is the ultimate goal going forward?
I had started working a lot, and I still do work a lot with Parkinson's Foundation when I stopped my old job, my old life. And I enjoyed it tremendously, but I couldn't help but see that there was the lack of young onset focus overall. And, you know, and I understand with the larger organizations, like they have to kind of play to their core market, which obviously from a Headpoint perspective is going to be traditional. So, and I've seen this with all the larger, you know, national ones that even if they think they're hitting that market, like having a call per quarter for the young onsets or a webinar per every 6 months, like they're not hitting us, right?
Mm-mm.
So I got this idea that I wanted to become that, and I wanted to make a community for people that truly was specific to young onset. So from the beginning, it was very important to be branded young onset, to be explicit to just young onset, to have like a different way, a different, you know, feel. And hopefully you find this to be the case in our branding, in our posting, in everything is bright and new and happy and not like, you know, sad, right? Not to overdo it like we said we tend to do, but at the end of the day, I've never been a downer. So, I wanted that environment very much so. So people weren't feeling like their life was over when they got diagnosed, right?
Yeah, most other stuff, it seems like it's like a pamphlet from the nursing home.
Exactly, exactly. So if you've seen our welcome video, and if you've seen our, and I love our Instagram page. You should interview Hannah. She's the master behind the posts. She's awesome. But if you haven't seen our Instagram page, anyone, go out and find it, YOP Network on Instagram. So, you know, I had this idea. I didn't have any resources. So I applied for a Parkinson's Foundation grant. That was the first thing that I went to do, which I received, which was great. I think I got $20,000 or something from them to get started. But what really helped me get going was, it's funny because my whole LinkedIn network had no idea about my diagnosis even after I left, because I kept it so quiet until I left. And I was interviewed, the Parkinson's Foundation at the time would also call on me a lot to do media opportunities and things. So they needed a woman to do a reporter style type interview about Parkinson's in Women's Day magazine, electronic article. And once I got done putting my foot in my mouth by saying, wouldn't you want someone older than me to do that? Isn't that an old ladies magazine? And they said, well, they target 50 and up. And I was like, okay, I'm one of those old women, I guess now. Mm-hmm. Once I got over that issue, I had a really great conversation with the reporter. She wrote a beautiful article online in their e-magazine. And it was really exciting for me. I hit Google. I was trending on Google for 45 minutes, which I thought was pretty cool. And I got 11,500 hits on the thing, which is like 100,000 times fewer than like most people. But I thought it was really exciting.
Yeah, it's like hitting the jackpot on the skee ball machine when all those tickets come out.
I'm really an honor. You also have the highest, most downloads of any episode we've ever had on our show.
Still.
It's ahead of everybody now. Past everyone.
Nice. No, I don't like to be second. So anyway, that's awesome. Thank you. So it hit my LinkedIn feed through all of this somehow. Like I didn't post it, but somehow it got into my LinkedIn feed. And I got tons and tons of messages from coworkers who were ever so, you know, beautiful and nice and sent wonderful messages that I would have been able to take advantage of or experience a long time before if I had told them sooner. However, one of the people that read it was a gentleman that I did a lot of work with, you know, prior to leaving that industry, in that he owned a health benefits firm that they would provide the employers with the plans, and then my systems would administer the plans. So we did a lot of co-selling together, and he had since sold his business and had developed a family foundation to seek and find charitable initiatives that they felt were, you know, worthy of using, of needing a good solid foundation to get started. So it was kind of like when they say that the planets align. And he said, you know, I might be able to help you. Let's get together and talk. That's what we did. And so he put me through the ringer. He's a really good businessman. And, you know, I had to do a market study. He said, I can't believe that something like this doesn't exist for all you people already. And I tried to tell him it doesn't. And he's like, well, he put me in, he could line me up with one of his consultants and help fund the initial market study. And I did interviews. I sourced people through the Facebook and social media groups to do some calls. And it was quite an organized plan. And, you know, once he was on board with that, you know, he said, we're going to do it different, though. He said, we're going to have everything built out and you're going to have all the systems you need before you start. So and he told me I needed to settle down because he knew how I operated and how I'd want to go fast. So we spent a good 12 to 18 months before we even announced it, you know, working on these things, putting together a website, getting a marketing group, figuring out how to do our accounting and all the things that you don't think about, you know, necessarily in the background. And I was very fortunate to link up with him because he ended up, you know, providing a nice catalyst grant that helped us do all of that. So yeah. I think that was the one, that was a huge blessing. That's really what allowed us to get going.
I understand, you know, that really just, but how do you explain
that?
Although everything lined up perfectly for you.
I know. I have to say, I'm not very religious, but I do, I am spiritual. And I do believe that there's forces around us that help make things happen. And he is, and this gentleman is very, very much so on the faithful side of the traditional religious side. And he's, every time I thank him, he's like just doing God's work, you know? And he said, you know, just paying it forward. I mean, yes. He's just really got his heart in the right place. They say kind of when the harder you work, the luckier you get. And that's, you know, kind of what happened to me, I think.
I think more so than that, when you bring Parkinson's into it, what you've done is you've worked hard up until the point you get Parkinson's. And then you've taken that hard work and turned it around into an avenue to benefit all of us. And I think that that's a huge message to send out to our listeners is that, you know, Parkinson's may have altered your identity slightly, but everything that you've built into yourself up to this point is now usable to apply to our community. And YOPN's waiting there for you to harness those skills and try and build you up to a person within the community that can utilize them. Absolutely. Doesn't matter what you've done. You could, if you were a broadcast professional, we would welcome you to come join our team. But in any way, in anything that you've done, even if it's just that, you know, you were somebody who cared for a family member for a period of time and then you got Parkinson's, you've got skills now. You know how it is to show empathy to another human being. And I guess that's my encouragement, is just to be like Anna and take those skills and utilize them within our community, please.
Doesn't quite have the same ring as Be Like Mike, but
Be Like Anna. So if we had one song to wrap up Anna Grill's life, what would it be?
God, what would it be? My life? I'll go Walking on Sunshine.
Well, Anna, it's been a pleasure getting to know you a little bit.
I know. I'm so glad I got to talk to you. Like I said, I was really sorry to be late for you.
Hey,
I didn't care about Mike. But I was sorry for you.
I appreciate that. I care about you, Mike.
Thanks, Anna.
When everybody else has gone away, Mike, I will still be there.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that.
Don't ever forget. You said you like me staying away from you, Michael.
So, folks,
I still don't know how to take that, but yeah. I'm a good boss. I know.
All right, folks. Go and visit yopnetwork.org. Again, yopnetwork.org. Thank you, Anna, and thank you, Mike.
Thank you,
nice,
guys.
Nice hearing you talk a little bit more today, buddy.
Thanks for letting me.
All right.